Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever lost someone that you've loved? Well, I think most of us have at one time or another. But can you imagine what it would be like to lose a child before their time? It just kind of shakes up everything and puts everything out of order. Have you ever wondered what the afterlife might be like? Now, would you like to learn what happens when you allow social media to help you heal? Tell me now, have you ever heard of a book called Tomorrow Comes? Now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for today? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and how to deal with loss and grief? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I'll be introducing you to my co-host, who is a success coach extraordinaire. She provides us with inspiration, information, and some really, really great advice about loss and grief. I'm pleased to announce that this show is now live on Talk 4 Media and syndicated on iHeartRadio Talk with over 55 million subscribers. We are archived 24/7 for your listening pleasure at iHeartRadio. So now it's time for you to sit back and relax as you enter the no wine zone. Pour yourself a glass of wine, get some cheese and crackers, and enjoy our show. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my co-host today. You know, the worst nightmare and the worst wound for any parent is the loss of a child. Such a loss cuts to the core of one's spirit and soul. But that painful experience sometimes opens our senses to mere inklings as well as clear indicators that there is an energy of life that survives mortal death. Such was Donna Mebane's experience, and she is my co-host and guest today, the author of Tomorrow Comes. Hi, Donna. How are you doing today?
January, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I'm happy to have you back on the show. Your topic is such a tough one. How long has it been since you lost Emma?
Well, it's been a little over 4 years now. Sometimes it feels like it was just yesterday, and sometimes I can't believe it's been, you know, it hasn't been all my life, it seems like I've been dealing with it. But, yeah, the actual physical time was about four and a half years ago.
Okay. Now, did you believe in the afterlife before Emma died? What were your thoughts about that?
You know, I believed in the afterlife in kind of a vague way. You know, I mean, I was brought up a Christian. I, baptized my children. I attended church. I did all the things that you were supposed to do. And then I became kind of a busy mom and busy. I work for a major financial institution and have worked all of my adult life. And I kind of let spirituality and all the things that I had learned about God kind of take a little bit of a back seat to the day-to-day aspects of just living my life. But I certainly had a vague idea. I believed again that there was an afterlife. I believed that something happened to you after you died. But when Emma died, I found that my vague sort of notions about what that was weren't enough. I really had to understand way better and way more deeply than I ever had to before. I just couldn't envision that she was suddenly gone. And the funny thing about Emma, and you know, January, because we've talked about this a little bit before, is she was not the kind of person that would be happy sprouting wings and suddenly being all-knowing, you know, walking down paved, you know, paths of paved gold and some of the things that people have in their mind that, that you know, is what happens when you die. I have trouble thinking of her trading her sort of signature, for suddenly being, you know, all-powerful and all-knowing. So I really had to think through, well, what would I want her to be experiencing? Mm-hmm. And because I write, I was able to make that up, and it turns out that it resonates with a lot of people.
Oh, it certainly does. You know, for someone who hasn't heard us discussing Emma before, could you briefly just share how sudden her death was and how there were no warning signs?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually, she and her sister Sarah, and I was on an assignment, a work assignment in London. And she and her sister had come about a week before she died to spend 10 days with me in London, and we had just a fabulous time. I mean, it was, I'll tell you just one little piece of it. At one point, she said, I really want to go to Ireland. And I said, oh, I don't want to, you know, we're in London. Why do you want to go to Ireland? She said, well, it's on my bucket list. Mm-hmm. And I laughed, and I said, you know, a 19-year-old doesn't get to have a bucket list. But we went, and I'm so glad we did, because 9 days later, she had been home for a week. We had Skyped with her earlier that evening. She went to bed. She had a couple of friends over. They tried on clothes, and they, you know, do what teenagers do. And she went to bed, and the next morning, she didn't arrive to work. She was home from college for the summer, and she worked at a local restaurant, and she hadn't arrived there, and my son happens to work there too, and he called my husband, and my husband went home and you know, found her in her room, and she had just died suddenly overnight. There was no warning sign whatsoever. She was absolutely as she had always been the night before. Only thing was that she elected not to go out to a party, which I suppose was a slight warning sign, because she was definitely a social butterfly. But she said she was a little tired. So she went to bed, and then she just never woke up. And I think we've talked a little bit about the fact that, and this was something that was completely unknown to me, but everybody is aware of SIDS, you know, that there's a sudden infant death syndrome, and oh my gosh, it's just the most horrible thing you can imagine. Your child is fine 1 second, and then you go in and they've not survived. It turns out that there is something in adults, and particularly young women, that's called sudden adult death syndrome, which is very similar. She just had something that was undetected, that we couldn't, you know, really uncover what the exact cause was. And when that's the case, they assume that it had something to do with her heart, and that it just was something that just happened. There's no real medical explanation for it.
And that sudden adult's death is SADS, and this is such a sad story. However, let's just talk a little bit about this wonderful website called Starshine Galaxy, and it's a recharging station for bereaved hearts, and this is a fabulous website. Right now, I have it in front of me, and I have the page where we meet Emma, and this is a fabulous collage that you have of Emma and her friends. Who put this together for you?
Well, actually, her friends did. We have several of those that we're still in the process of posting. One of the things that you mentioned in your introduction about technology and how that might change the grieving process, one of the things that we had no shortage of was thousands of pictures of Emma and her friends. I mean, you know, on Facebook, there are just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures. And so several of her friends put together those collages and brought them to the funeral, which was as much as we could make it, a celebration of her life. So you see in those pictures that there are, you know, some where she looks confused and some where she looks happy and some where she looks sad. And there just was a again, just no shortage whatsoever of Emma moments. That and what was interesting to me was how different they all were based on you know, the relationship that the person had with her.
Well, you know, when I look at her beautiful pictures and I look at her, she is fabulous, beautiful, and she kind of reminds me a little bit in a wonderful way of this new comedian, Melissa McCarthy. And, you know, you see her and you see her smile and you immediately love her. It's just a done deal. And that's the way Emma was, wasn't she?
She really was. I mean, I think one of the things that caused me to, or one of the things I was thinking about that led to my writing the first book, Tomorrow Comes, was this notion that she really, she wasn't somebody who had, you know, obvious talents. Like, she was always on the B team in basketball, or she was, you know, she was one who was never really an A plus student. That my other children are quite focused on their studies, and, you know, one of them has a PhD and whatnot. But when I thought about Emma, and I thought about, well, what was special about her? And again, technology really reinforced this through all the Facebook posts that happened immediately after her death and continue to happen to this day. She was special because she was just so kind and nice, and she believed in people. She was someone that one of her friends told me, when her friend decided that she wanted to be a fashion designer, Emma said, "I cannot wait to wear, you know, some of the fashions that you create." Whereas a lot of her other friends are like, "Oh, Paige, you know, you have to be in New York to do something like that." And and so she just believed in people and was just kind and funny and sweet. And it turns out that that can be quite heroic, can it? I mean, just consistently be kind. And so I began to see that as sort of heroic features of hers, and I wondered how they would play out in the life that I'm hoping she's experienced that has happened since her earthly life has ended.
Oh, and your book is just amazing. I dare anyone to read it, and I dare you to try to put it down. And I dare you not to shed a few tears, because it's that kind of a book. I mean, and they're not horrible tears. They're tears of remembrance and tears of celebration. It's a fantastic book. Also, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the book that she wrote, a book about shapes, and also a new book, The Story of Emma. We'll be right back with Donna.
Any moment we can be painfully reminded that none of us is immune from loss. Perhaps the worst nightmare of any parent is the loss of a child. When this happens to someone else, most parents quietly wonder how they could ever deal with such an inversion of the natural order. When author Donna Mebbin lost her youngest daughter, Emma, she initially wanted to give up and join her beautiful, spirited 19-year-old. But she didn't. Instead, she wrote the multi-award-winning novel, Tomorrow Comes, an amazing book in which Donna chronicles the way her family lives forward and imagines the way Emma does too, in a magical land called After. Tomorrow Comes is available on Amazon and other online booksellers. With over 30 years as a registered nurse with empathic ability, Carolyn Green, a.k.a. The Energy Nurse, is bridging the gap between traditional and alternative medicine. Certified in the areas of energy medicine, life coaching, and as a medical intuitive, she brings to each client an integrative approach to body, mind, and spirit. Her book, found on Balboa Press and Amazon, Getting to Know You, Guided Pearls of Wisdom for a More Soulful Existence, is a channeled journey for clearing the mind clutter to bring about healthier thought patterns. As a motivational speaker, Carolyn brings new light to old issues and is engaging, interactive, and enlightening. With her newly launched The Energy Nurse jewelry line, she brings to you stones and crystals that are not only beautiful to wear, but balancing and healing as well. To contact or learn more about Carolyn, go to www.theenergynurse.com. Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shalt Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shalt Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back to the No Whine Zone today. We're visiting with the author of Tomorrow Comes, and this is a story that Donna Mibben has written about her lovely daughter, Emma. You know, when humans sustain injury, there's sensitivity. In the case of an open wound, we will protect it with a bandage. If there's a blow or fracture, then we put a splint or cast. But when the wound is to our spiritual core, there is no protection. And this is something that, unfortunately, we go through, and so many of us are never prepared for when that happens. Don't you agree, Donna?
Oh, yes. I mean, thank goodness, you can't possibly project what the loss of someone you love is going to do to you. I mean, I think it's, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 in the pain charts, it's an 11 or 12 or 20.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's just no, you know, fortunately you're protected from really imagining what that's like, and that's the good news. The bad news is then it happens and suddenly it's your world, and there's just no preparation for it.
Well, now, we talked about before, you were kind of ambivalent about the afterlife before Emma died. And now, do you feel differently about it now? Explain your feelings.
You know, Emma's death had an immediate impact on how I viewed the afterlife. She had just been here, and she was so vibrant and so present and so much, you know, she was the funny one and the joyful one in our family. She was so much a part of it that I just kept saying over and over again, where are you? Where did you go? How could you possibly have been here 1 second and then just be gone? So
yeah.
I needed to think about her being someplace. I needed to think about her being someplace that wouldn't confuse her, wouldn't frighten her, would be something that she'd be able to kind of handle and understand. You know, it's funny that I've come to believe that Emma's death was sort of the unique way that she left the nest. And I know that sounds crazy, but I've actually experienced that now with all of my children in different ways. My 35-year-old daughter just moved to Japan, and she'll be there for 2 years. And that's been hard because, you know, she's so far away and I can't, you know, see her when I want to and all of that. And in a way, Emma left the nest abruptly and suddenly, but I had to sort of believe that her life went on in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I created a place called After that looked initially for Emma in the first book, Tomorrow Comes, a lot like before. It looks a lot like 1400 Sherwood Lane, which is where I live. You know, it has a basement that's ideal for kids to hang out in. Her room is exactly the same. I mean, the very first morning after she died, I speculated the first line in the book is Emma opened her eyes, and I speculated that she went to work the same way that she would have gone to work had she been here. And now things had changed, but she still sort of understood what she was seeing. When she finally saw my aunt, who had died six or so months before Emma did, she did realize what had happened to her, but she was sort of prepared for it because nothing had changed dramatically for her. Now, over time, as I've written book two and as I've outlined book three, over time, things do change, but she's ready for it. She can handle it.
Yeah.
She's prepared for it.
Well, I love the way you did it because you kind of, while you were easing Emma into this after, the world of after, it was helpful to the readers to take that trip with her and to experience what she was going through. And since I've read the book, I've often thought about people I've known who died and how it must have been for them. And I think you're pretty close to how that process goes through. Now, do you think that when you wrote this, that Emma was helping you write it?
You know, I didn't think much about that as I was writing it, but as I was writing the second book, which interestingly talks about the things I got right in the first book and the things I got wrong from Emma's perspective. So Emma is laughing about some of the things that I, you know, made up that she thought were just ridiculous. I'll give you an example. At one point in book one, she has a party in the basement and Michael Jackson shows up. And then all of a sudden, all of these dead entertainers arrive, and the party gets completely out of control, and my grandparents have to step in. They're, of course, deceased as well. And so anyhow, she, in the second book, part of what she says is, oh, Mom, you know, Michael Jackson, come on. You know, there's no way Michael Jackson showed up at one of my parties. So, you know, but back to your original question, I wrote it very quickly, and I wrote it almost immediately after she died, while I was still in the phase of hardly being able to brush my teeth and hardly being able to get out of bed, and thought the only thing that I did when I got out of bed was write. And so I couldn't have imagined, and I still can't, that I could do something that quickly and, frankly, that well. You know, and I think it's not just my saying it. As you mentioned, it's won numerous awards and whatnot. If there hadn't been a hand on my shoulder, you know, and one of the things that sort of kept happening while I was writing was I had pictures of my children on my desk, and her picture kept moving. It would be down or it would be on another side or whatever, and I attributed it to the cats, you know, that the cats must have gotten up on the, you know, but I would go to get a cup of coffee and come back and the picture would have moved and there was no cat in sight. So, you know, it takes you a while to believe that it could possibly be really Emma. I wanted to believe it, but it took me a long time to get to the place, and I still have doubts sometimes, but I definitely think on my better days, I absolutely believe that she's there with me, particularly when I write.
Well, after I read it, I had no doubt in my mind that she was a part of this project. And your imprint is Starshine Galaxy, and tell us a little bit about the first book to carry the Starshine Galaxy imprint, a book about shapes. Tell us about this. This is an adorable story.
So Emma, towards when she was 17 or 18, she was really trying to settle on what she wanted to become. And she ended up deciding that she wanted to be an artist, which is really was really kind of a shock to all of us. But as looking back, and you do see on the website some of her artwork, looking back, she really was quite an artist. And it's just one of those things that you kind of don't realize until all of a sudden it's like she's accepted into an art school, and you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, she's pretty good. So I, of course, as we all do, saved all of her projects from school, you know, and everything that she had ever done. And I happened to find in a one of my boxes shortly after she decided she wanted to be an artist, a book that she had created when she was in the first grade, and it's actually called A Book About Chaps, which she was trying to say shapes. And what's so hilarious about this book is that she gets them all wrong. So she says, you know, a squire is really a rectangle, and, you know, a demon is, you know, and it's just, well, so I showed it to her, and she thought that was the most hilarious thing. She showed all of her friends, and when we had her funeral, it was one of the things that, of course, then it became so much more meaningful to me. It was not a joke any longer. It was something, just a beautiful memory that I had. And I had it out on one of the tables, and everybody that went through wanted a copy. And so my husband actually published it on a cute little format that's kind of like a coloring book and whatnot. And just it's really a delightful look into the mind of a child as they try to structure, you know, their world and think about shapes and all of that. It's really very cute. And actually, January, just not to interrupt, but that's actually, we have started a foundation to capture things like that, things that children who are now deceased have created. My husband and several of our friends and people that work with us in the foundation are really quite good at publishing and, you know, pulling things together like this. And we that's one of the things that we're trying to do, is to preserve things in electronic format or in any kind of format that, that children who are now deceased have produced.
Well, that is a wonderful thing to do. You know, I have a frequent guest on the show, Dr. Bernie Siegel, and he works with children who are terminal and dying, and he has them express so much through their artwork, which he publishes and shares with Yeah, Dr. Bernie Siegel, and he's written several books about children's artwork and what it tells you.
I would love to make that connection. If you're willing to do that, I'd love to chat with him. That would be great.
I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. Also, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Donna's going to share her website, and they have an online version of the book, Chaps, for free that you can download. So we'll be right back with Donna.
Are you pursuing your passion, doing what you really want to do in life? Do you ever feel everyone around you is succeeding, leaving you behind, feeling unhappy and unsatisfied with your life? There are many ways to become successful, but getting there is half the battle. In his book, Finding Your Road to Success, How to Get There Without Getting Lost, Patrick Daniel shares tips on what it really takes to be successful. As a CPA, chartered professional accountant, author, life coach, charity founder, investor, and family man, Patrick lives success every day of his life. Connect with Patrick at www.findingyourroadtosuccess.com. The new book, God Reconsidered, Searching for the Truth in the Battle Between Atheism and Religion, by Scott Smith, explains why both militant atheists and believers in traditional religions ignore inconvenient truths. Scott argues in favor of the insights of Gnostic Christianity. Check out www.godreconsidered.com to read a sample chapter. That's godreconsidered.com.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes? People who have priceless personalities? In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Priceless Personalities is also available at audiblebooks.com. We have a priceless personality visiting with us, and she's sharing the story of her priceless daughter. Donna Mebben grew up wanting to be two things, a mother and a writer. She became a mom after the birth of her first child, Jason. She became a writer after the death of her youngest child, Emma. While Donna has had numerous writing experiences over the years, she became a published author after she wrote Tomorrow Comes, as a way of envisioning a future for her 19-year-old daughter who went to sleep one night and sadly never woke up. Donna calls Tomorrow Comes a work of reality fiction because it captures the reality of grief that family and friends endured after Emma died. And at the same time, it creates an enchanting fictional world of after, where Emma can continue to be herself and where her mother can share Emma with us.
You know, I've never heard reality fiction before. I like that term. That really describes the genre that you're writing in, doesn't it?
It does. And I don't know if we've made that up or not. I actually don't know if there really is a genre. But as you know, January, and thank you again so much. I know you're so busy, but thank you so much for reading the book and for spending some time with Emma. But as you know, the book does actually structurally go back and forth from something that is very real, and that's the grief that we're all feeling. And each chapter that it describes our grief and what we're going through and is told from the perspective of a different member of my family and or the community or a friend and that kind of thing. And then the other chapters are all about Emma and her journey of discovery. Mm-hmm. So I've had some of her friends are not the brightest bulbs on the planet. So they've said things like, you know, I speculate in part of the book that she can't watch new TV shows because she can really only experience some of what she's experienced before. And so I had lunch with a couple of her friends, and they're like, in the next book, can you make it so that she can watch TV shows? And I said, you know this isn't real, right? I mean, you know that, you know, I have no idea if she can watch TV shows or not. So that's the part that I think people hope is true, but obviously we won't know until we go.
Yeah. Share your website information and share how people can get Tomorrow Comes, and then I want to talk about the other books.
Sure, yeah. Our website is starshinegalaxy.com, and as January said, there's a lot of other information on there about Emma, about some of the projects that she did, about her art. There's also information on there about other resources that are available to people who have suffered a loss. Mm-hmm. And I have, one of the things that I have learned in during the course of this experience is that you don't really have to have lost a child to really get something from some of these resources. I mean, you and I felt like we were instant sisters, and you had lost a husband, a dear husband, several years ago. And I think that it's anybody who's experienced a loss, whether that's the loss of a job or the loss of a child or the loss mm-hmm. of a dearly beloved sister or a spouse, I definitely think that most of the resources that we point people to on our website can be very helpful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, my loss actually was 49 years ago, and it's amazing that it is as real today as it was then. You know, when people say, oh, you'll get over it, life goes on. Well, life does go on, I have to say, and I've had many wonderful moments and many joyous times with my family, but you never get over it. It stays with you forever, forever.
One of the things that I wrote about, an article about, was the dumb things people say. They try to be helpful. You know, they're trying to be, and it comes from a good place, but that you'll get over it is kind of crazy. I remember a colleague of mine saying to my boss, whom I was actually quite good throughout all of this, but a couple months later she said to this colleague, you know, when's Donna going to get over this? And the colleague said, you know, I don't know, so-and-so, how long would it take you if you lost your daughter? Mm-hmm. You know, do you think you'd get over it, kind of thing? So people say things that I don't think they realize how hurtful they are. But I think, you know, one of the very first things that that starts you on the journey of healing and, to your point, to joy again, is to understand that you will never be the same.
No.
Now, some of that is good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was not a writer, you know, before I'm a dad. I liked it, but I didn't write. I wouldn't say I was a writer. She made me a writer. So I was not the same, and that was a positive piece. But there's certainly a hugely negative piece. My husband talks about it being akin to losing a major limb or your sight or, you know, your ability to taste. Mm-hmm. You live without it, but you will never be the same. Even when I feel the most joyful, I find myself thinking how much better it could be if Emma were here to experience this gorgeous day, or if Emma were here to see the birth of, you know, the marriage of my son, or, you know, I mean, like, even when I'm feeling the happiest, there's a shadow there that says Emma should be here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when losing a husband, it's just like I feel I have to experience everything double. I have to experience it for myself, and then I have to experience the joy or sadness he would have experienced. So it kind of does add to the significance of your life and your existence. You know, Emma's legacy, what about is the new book, The Story of Emma, authored by Emma and Paige Wassel? Tell me about that book.
So, you know, again, my husband, we're all finding these treasures of Emma. One of the things that that we believe now is that you continue to parent a child, even a child who is no longer physically with you. And that's certainly the case, again, if they go to Japan. They're in Japan for 2 years. You know, I still continue to be Sarah's mom, and I will parent her despite the fact that she's not physically with me. Well, that's how I feel about Emma. And one of the things that we've been doing is really, again, as I mentioned, really trying to preserve every aspect of her that we can in a fun way, because that's the way that she would have wanted it to be. And so we found these little treasures in the story of Emma. It's just something that she and one of her best friends, because she had many best friends, put together when they were just, I think, 11 or so. And it's just a hilarious little snippet of an 11-year-old's life. And I'm sure she never would have thought that it would have seen the light of day necessarily. But again, we do this for her friends, and we do it for people who never even knew her, because I think one of the things that we've dedicated at least a part of our life to is having people who knew Emma remember her, and people who didn't know her come to understand that it was their loss.
Yes, yes. And it's wonderful to meet her, and I rejoice in the fact that you were able to share her the way you did. It's a very difficult thing to do. I know that I've tried to write about this topic, and it's beyond me. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. And so I think that you were able to do it, because I think she was really guiding that pen, or she was at that computer with you every second of the way.
Well, I sure hope that's true. I really hope that's true. And like I said, there are times when I absolutely believe it, and hearing you say it, it really adds to the pebbles on the side of I do believe it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wonderful. We're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit with you about technology and how the technology that we have in the world now can help you deal with loss and grief. We'll be right back.
The moment after you serve your customer, what will they tell the world? Social media has us so connected that a single voice has unprecedented power to benefit and to harm. What do your customers say? Do you know? Do you respond? What do you say? For years, Steve Holtquist has been helping businesses use the internet to be more productive and successful. Now he's showing businesses how to go back to the future, fostering and empowering relationships. Learn how to work in this new world. Find Steve at InfiniteSummit.com. From cowgirl to caregiver to consultant, meet Becky Fiola, author of The Elder Care Consultant, your guide to making the best choices possible. Growing up on remote ranches across the western states, she tended to orphan creatures large and small. Later on, that nurturing instinct served her well as the primary caregiver for her late husband. And now, she offers hope and guidance as a consultant to the elderly and their families. When you need advice on caring for an aging loved one, you can find those answers and her book at Amazon.com and her website, www.assistedlivingadvantage.com. What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, play and well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. My guest was born in Pennsylvania, and as the daughter of a U.S. Navy commander, Donna moved frequently in her childhood years and so developed an easy, approachable style and a warm sense of humor that help her make new friends easily. She applies these same attributes to her writing, mixing gentle good humor with heartbreaking authenticity and simple, accessible language with profound truths about loss and hope. And you know, this balancing mourning and living, that's a tough act to do, isn't it?
It is, because to your point, I mean, I think one of the things about the human being is that they are survivors. I mean, you know, you find a way, don't you, to go forward. And I think that I can't imagine that any one of your listeners had not said, who was a parent, had not said at one point or another, if I lost a child, I would die.
I would
not be able to survive. And I certainly said that. I certainly, from afar, when, you know, an acquaintance or a friend, someone I knew suffered that kind of loss, I thought, oh, I just can't, how could they possibly, you know, go on? And I think absolutely the trauma of it all is something that you think you can't get through. But the human nature is one that says, I will survive. Mm-hmm. I will find joy again, even if you don't want to. I mean, I went through a period of time when probably the first year that Emma died, and every time I laughed, I thought, oh, gosh, should I be laughing?
Yeah.
You know, will people be thinking I'm a terrible mother? I don't miss my child. You know, will people be thinking, or even can I honestly, is this, it startled me. Am I laughing? My child has died. How could I possibly be laughing? Yeah. But you do. You just do. I mean, that's part of who you are. And I think that was one of the ways that I think you do learn to balance living and mourning, is that you let yourself cry when you want to, but you laugh when you want to too, because those are two very human emotions that will bring you back to humanity.
And it's strange how suddenly one will overcome you and you'll be bereaved, and then the next moment or so you'll find humor in something. And I think finding that humor is so critical when you're trying to heal and to go on with living. And that's, you know, at so many funerals and wakes, people resort to humor. Just it's like gallows humor almost, just to get through these things. And you need to be able to do that. Let's talk about the technology. How has that changed the grieving process these days with social media?
You know, I think it's a cliche to say, but I'll say it anyhow. Technology changes everything. You know, even such fundamental things as how we define, make, and keep friends, as well as how we come together when we lose them. You'll recall, January, that in the book there's a sort of an argument between Emma and her grandfather, and her grandfather doesn't want her to make new friends, and because he feels as though that's dangerous, you know, that now her grandfather lived in a time when you knew the people that you went to church with, you knew the people that, you know, your doctor and your lawyer and all stuff. You didn't know some stranger 1,000 miles away that was a friend of yours on Facebook.
Right,
but today, people do know those people. They are friends. And what's interesting is we asked her for, and were reluctantly granted, friend status. So when she died, so we were friends with her on Facebook. And it was funny because she said, you know, I'll do that, but don't ever judge me. You know, because the you see on Facebook might not be the you see. You know? And she was absolutely right. But when she died, that was precious to us. Facebook gave us an intimate look into a whole dimension of her that we didn't know up close and personal. We certainly knew her as a daughter, a sister, a granddaughter, a niece, and all of that. But Facebook gave us new ways that people understood her, knew stories about her that we didn't know. And this was primarily after she died, because I will say when she was alive, it did sometimes make me cringe to see some of the stuff that she put on Facebook. But after she died, you know, it was all about, oh gosh, the time that a kid had been homeschooled and he was terrified to come to a, you know, freshman year of high school. And, you know, she didn't even know him, and she knew that he had been homeschooled, and so she came up to him at lunch and had him sit at her table. Table was the popular table, and you know, and how that changed his life. That changed his whole high school experience. I didn't know that, but he talked about it on Facebook when she died, you know, the impact that she had had on his life. And so it was funny, because face-to-face, people didn't know what to say. They're like, there are no words. There are no words. But on Facebook, there were thousands of words. Mm-hmm. And each one of them brought me a different kind of piece of knowledge of Emma. And taken together, they were really the words that brought me comfort, as opposed to the things that good friends would say, like, you'll get over it, or, you know.
Right. Yeah, and it's almost like these are little golden nuggets that are part of the complex jigsaw that was Emma.
Oh.
And you put these into the places, and it fills in. And these are things you would never have heard about had she not.
No. And I think sometimes people will send, you know, I think in the past, sometimes people, I remember when my grandmother died, and people would send me a letter or a card, and, you know, but the volume of things that you experience through social media about your child is just, there's comfort in the volume itself, as well as the individual experiences that you learn, the nuggets, as you said, that are just become a part of the fabric of who she was. And I see those things up close and personal. And when I mostly saw her as a daughter, and occasionally a friend, a buddy, you know, a shopping buddy, mostly a daughter, and a sister, and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's been amazing to me. And then to stay connected with her friend.
Yeah. That's wonderful. You know, I'm going through this with a dear friend of mine here in Payson. She's my age, and she lost her 29-year-old granddaughter, who left behind a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Aww.
And I mean, you read these Facebook messages, and they just touch your heart. And I know it's very difficult to know what to say, but somehow it seems like when it comes to writing things down, I think people do a better job.
I think so too. And you know what's interesting is I've gotten messages at all times of the day or night. You know, I just got something a week or so ago from a grammar school friend of hers who had been going through and I had sort of lost touch with her. She wasn't a good friend of Emma's when Emma died, but she had been going through some boxes and she's preparing to move, and she found pictures of Emma and a card that Emma had sent her when she was sad about something, and she posted them on Facebook for me to see, and it was just wonderful. And then, you know, sometimes I think people don't think about her anymore, and then at 2 o'clock in the morning I'll get a text that says, I just can't sleep. Today is a missing Emma day, you know. I think the other thing about technology is it allows you to be in the moment, you know.
Yeah.
Now, if you didn't write that at that very moment, the next day you might say, oh, should I really send that to her? Will that upset her or whatever?
But
the fact that you have a vehicle to be in the moment is also a way that I think it changes.
It absolutely does. Well, you know, we've had such a wonderful visit with you today. We always do. And I want to share with our listeners that Donna will be back with us next month on October 14th. And we will again visit with her, and we'll get to share some more Emma memories with Donna. Thank you so much, Donna. It's been an honor to share you with my listeners today.
Thank you, January. It's an honor always to talk with you.
To my wonderful listeners, we hope you have enjoyed our show today. I hope it has touched your heart the way it's touched mine. My upcoming guests are all exciting, eclectic, and energizing, just like Donna. Love to welcome you to our No Whining World. When you can, sign on to my website, januaryjones.com. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, my dear friends, stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then you can start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest today, Donna Meeben. Thank you for sharing your beautiful daughter, Emma, with us. And this is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe as we close with music by Sorantos.
This is Sorantos, and you're listening to January Jones.
We've got the love we think we deserve. In my life I've made so many mistakes. And so we're in love.
I hope you enjoyed January Jones' latest episode.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.